Teachers Talking Tech is sponsored in part by StartDot, a handwriting app and online resource for teachers and children. Learn more at startdothandwriting.com.
Hello and welcome to Teachers Talking Tech. I'm Eric Robinson.
I'm Mike Brown.
And today we have a special opportunity to interview Paul Solars. Paul Solars is the author of the book Learn Like a Pirate, and we've been talking a lot about innovation, and a lot of our discussions have had to do with tech, but a lot have not.
Right, and I think we realize, you know, we understand that innovation in the classroom doesn't always mean using technology in the classroom. Innovation can be your teaching styles and strategies, doing things a little bit of a different way than other people have traditionally done them. And so technology can be part of it, but doesn't have to be the only part of it.
Yeah, man. So Mike and I asked Paul about kind of his strategies, how he he has a student-centered classroom idea, and that's what his book is all about. I know both Mike and I have read it, and it has totally transformed my room. So it was so great to be able to talk to him. So as always, we try to strive to keep these episodes kind of short. So we split this up into two different episodes. So after this one, just go on to episode two and hope you enjoy it. We are doing a Skype call with Paul Solars, and he is the author of Teach Like a Pirate. No, and I'm going to totally mess this up 1,000 times.
That's fine.
Learn Like a Pirate, right? And yep. And he has been instrumental in kind of molding my class over the last few years just by reading some of his ideas, and he's really innovative. We wanted to make sure we could have a chance to interview him. He was gracious enough to come on with us. So how are you doing, Paul?
Oh, great. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited to chat with you guys tonight.
Great. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I've been teaching fifth grade in Arlington Heights, Illinois for the past 18 years. I grew up in the area, went away to school in Minnesota for a few years, came back, had to stay around family. Love what I'm doing. You know, I wrote the book. It was a dream come true for me. I got Dave Burgess to thank for that. Great opportunity. And then it's been great just meeting people, talking to people about education all throughout the world. So it's a good run. We've been having a fun time.
Great. And just for anybody out there that might not know, Dave Burgess wrote Teach Like a Pirate. And then Paul's book is Learn Like a Pirate. Correct?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, so that's why at the beginning I was stumbling. There are two great books.
Happens all the time.
Yeah. So where did you get your inspiration for this book?
Sure. Well, you know, Dave approached me. We knew each other through Twitter, and he had asked me, you know, are you willing or interested in maybe someday writing a book? And I said, of course, what would it be about? You know, and he's like, well, the unique things that you do in your classroom. And I said, oh, you know, I had always shared on Twitter things that I was doing in class, never thinking necessarily that they're all that unique. We're all doing great things in our classroom. You know, I just happen to share more than the typical person. But he's like, here's, you know, you're doing some really neat things. I think people would really benefit from some of your ideas. So he asked me if I'd write the book. I said, absolutely. And I really had to dive deep into, you know, who I am as a teacher and what my style is and try to isolate the things that are unique about, you know, the way I teach in our fifth grade classroom. So, you know, it is kind of the way I was raised as a child from my parents, you know, this idea that the child has the right to make decisions and choices throughout their day that affect them. You know, so as a child, my parents just kind of let me explore, make mistakes, you know, break things accidentally. I've broken lamps as kids. I remember playing ball in the house and all that, you know, and my kids are kind of the same way. I say, you know, you're allowed to get yourself into a little bit of trouble as long as you're trying to do the right thing. You know, sometimes we're going to take risks and they're going to fail along the way, but our classroom is that environment that's a laboratory for risk taking and you know, trying to challenge ourselves to do new things. So it's partly the way I was raised and partly the way I just think a classroom should run.
Yeah, no, totally. And I love that idea of that kind of small failures, just small failures, mm-hmm. as long as you're on the pathway to growth as a learner. And I think there's so many times we don't, and you talk about this in your book, we don't give kids the opportunity to lead, and we don't give them opportunities to fail, and we steal that from them. I remember hearing a TED Talk, too, where somebody talked about that, where they had said that if we bulldoze through kids, or like the kind of idea of helicopter parents or bulldozer parents, if we don't let kids experience failure, then they're never going to be proud of their successes. That idea that they have to be in charge of that. So let's get in some of the big ideas of your book, Paul. What are some of like the, just, I know there's a lot to cover here, but maybe just some of the big things you want to get across.
Yeah, I think the easiest way for me to describe it is that PIRATE is an acronym, and it stands for six different things that I believe you need to have in order to create a classroom environment such as the one that I try to do in our school. I believe my room's kind of a student-led classroom. Of course, as the teacher, I still make all the plans and I still decide what we're doing and when we're doing it. But I let my kids, you know, kind of direct that and kind of help each other along the way. It's not constantly an environment where I'm assessing each individual student's progress. It's one where we can assess our whole class progress until we're in a groove, at which point I can go look for individuals and try to figure out what it is that they're struggling with and what it is that they understand. So in order to do that, I thought PIRATE could stand for peer collaboration, because in order for kids to lead, they have to be comfortable knowing that others will follow their lead when they try to show leadership skills. So we collaborate in nearly everything that we do so that they build those relationships, and then they start to trust each other. And then when somebody tries to lead, they're willing to follow because they're not used to a hierarchy that might have been in earlier grades. You know, we kind of get rid of the hierarchy in our classroom. We try to level the playing field and make sure that everybody sees each other as equals. And I describe how I do that in the book with marble theory and a few other things. The I stands for improvement-focused learning. You know, in our classroom, I don't use grades on assignments, and I don't give tests except in math class, and I could probably get rid of those in math as well. Getting rid of grades for me is something that I appreciate. It's not necessary for a student-led classroom, but when we're trying to always get an A and we're always fighting for the best, sometimes we step on others along the way. And in our collaborative classroom, we want everybody helping everybody. So, you know, I can see how some kids are doing well while they're helping other people. I don't need them to constantly be soaring above others in order to see, you know, how smart they are or how far they've come. Mm-hmm. So we focus on improvement and feedback.
Nice. Well, and actually, I want to stop you right there, Paul, because I actually want to tell a story from my classroom. The first part of that, where you're talking about leveling the playing field, there's something in your book, Give Me Five. And for those of you who have not read the book, Give Me Five is just an idea that you stop the whole classroom and they look and listen to you. And teachers, I think, are used to doing this. Like, they clap or they say, boys and girls. Everybody has their way to do this. But the difference with this is that anyone at any time in your classroom can stand up and say, give me five. And everybody has to stop what they're doing and look at that person. And when I first told my kids about this, usually they get started slow. Like, they're kind of almost nervous about doing it, but they do get into it. Like, I just had four kids do it today. Give me five. I found some stuff on the floor that belongs to somebody. Or give me five. Some people left the books out, and we need to work harder to put these things away. And just those little things put everybody on that level playing field where kids feel like they're in charge as much as the adult does.
For sure. You know, if we're sharing stories, I do want to share a quick story about Give Me Five that got me really scared. You know, a lot of teachers say they're a little nervous to use Give Me Five in their classroom. They're worried that kids are going to use it wrongly and inappropriately at bad times or whatever. Well, one of the things we work hard for in our classroom is silent day at the end of the year, where I'm the one who's silent. You can call it whatever you want, but I can't talk the entire day. The kids have to run the entire class. I leave sub plans. They act as though they're the sub. We talk about the importance of, you know, everybody kind of allowing people to lead. So the rule is that you have to be the best follower you've ever been, and you only follow if it's a good idea, but you basically allow others to lead. Well, I always do it on the last math test day of the year. So the Unit 9 math test. And I work in the back of the room, so I'm there, but I'm trying not to supervise. I tell them, pretend I'm invisible. I don't want to give you glares or look at you. I want you to do things because it's the right thing to do. So I'm standing in the back of the room working on books or whatever I'm doing. And in the middle of the, or maybe like 5-10 minutes into the math test, there's a give me five that breaks through the silence of a math test. And now keep in mind that doesn't happen normally. You know, that's not a typical use of give me five. And I start to worry like, oh my gosh, what are they going to do? What are they going to say? And I have to be silent. And it turns out that they said, do you guys remember yesterday, Mr. Solars told us that we had to remember to do blah, 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 whatever it was. I know that he wouldn't want us to forget. So make sure you do that. And it was exactly the right thing. If I hadn't reminded them, I probably would have had some parent phone calls about my irresponsibility. So they actually bailed me out on that one. So it turns out that it's more than just, you know, giving kids power. It's actually really, truly helping the teacher when you have multiple brains trying to remember everything that needs to be done.
I agree. That's awesome. I think I interrupted you right in the middle of you were on R. What was the R in Pirate? Okay.
Sure. So the R stands for responsibilities or responsibility, but the kids have to have actual responsibilities that they have to do for the class to actually run properly. So, you know, not fake ones like plant water or whatever. I actually do my own plant watering in my class, but, you know, actually, and I'm nothing against plant watering, by the way. I've done that before. No offense to that. I just don't want them killing my plants. That's really all. So the truth is, like real responsibilities, such as, you know, getting the computer cart for us is a big responsibility. Running the end of the day routines that we have of evaluating ourselves and going over what assignments are due in the next coming days or whatever. These kinds of responsibilities that are really important. So some of these are like assigned jobs where kids would do the job if it hasn't already been done. But we also allow anybody to do anybody's job. So if it's your job to get the computer cart, but the cart's already in our room, you're set. If the cart's not in our room, you go get the cart. So they're just kind of the supervisors of the job. And then we have, you know, shared responsibilities where no one is assigned the job, but it needs to make sure that it gets done all the time. And so kids are constantly doing things like, give me five, don't forget two. And then they say what it needs to get done if it's a multiple person job, or they just do it themselves. So these responsibilities get them to realize that they have an active role in running the classroom. And that sort of thing just keeps them tuned in. It kind of is like being the teacher. You're kind of thinking, what do I have to do next all the time? And that helps build their responsibility. The A stands for active learning. You know, if you have a classroom like I had early in my career where it's kind of a lot of sit down and a lot of teacher on the stage, you know, that kind of environment doesn't promote the students wanting to necessarily interrupt the class with a gimme five or wanting to lead each other. That kind of promotes individual responsibilities and paying attention to the teacher. So in our classroom, as often as I can, I try to get off of the stage and I try to get them into partnerships or small groups to work on something active, preferably than a worksheet, you know, something more like we did a lab today in science, or, you know, we're working on a student-led conference that they're going to do at home instead of in school. So they're making slideshows, but I give them partners. I assign them what I call responsibility partners. Because although they're doing the same activity, they're not, you know, like a student-led conference, it's not going to be the same product. So they're going to be doing different things. So they're sitting next to each other, helping each other out, but they're clearly doing a different product or a different activity along the way. So, but that's one where they're more likely to say, give me five. Here's something that you need to know about, or here's something that we need to do, because they're actively involved and the teacher's not teaching on stage. Yeah, so that active. That's huge.
Yep. Yeah, and that takes a lot of trust in your students. I feel like that some teachers, in order to back off, they would feel like, oh, but are my kids going to step up? Are my kids going to learn? Are the partners going to do their jobs? It does take a lot of trust to let that happen.
Well, and beyond trust, like, you have to give feedback. You know, you have to be constantly assessing them and observing them and giving them feedback. And sometimes I'll say, give me five. Everybody sit down right now over here. We need to talk, you know, if it's kind of a big deal, or, you know, if it's a small little tweak, it's give me five. I noticed that you guys aren't exactly getting this part right. Let's make sure we do this. And you do that until you can trust them a little bit better and give them a bit of a longer leash. But, you know, in our classroom, I have to just go on the assumption that they'll get there eventually. You know, it's growth mindset. If I think they won't get there, they're not going to get there. So my idea is they're probably not going to come to me ready to go. So I'm going to have to take them there and help them along the way. So it's tell them what you expect, give them lots and lots of feedback. You know, I don't do necessarily like rewards and consequences so much like that. I try to give thank yous at the end, you know, so if we did a great job, I try to say thank you in certain ways. And sometimes, you know, I might give them something as a thank you, but I try not to dangle rewards, you know, do this for this reason, because I kind of want to build their intrinsic motivation. But you know, they need to feel appreciated, and they need that praise in some sort of way, not so that it makes them do it in the future, but so that they feel appreciated by their teacher and it's worth all the hard work that they're putting in. Mm. You know, so that's why, you know, that kind of thing. I don't necessarily trust that my brand new kids on the first day of school are going to do it right. I trust that they're going to learn eventually with a lot of support and help from me. You know, I'm just going to have to really be on top of things and making sure that I give good feedback.
Good. All right. Well, and you got, there's two more that you're talking about here. The T, what does that stand for, Pirate?
Sure. So T is 21st century skills. You know, in our classroom, you know, content decides and drives what I'm going to teach. It's going to drive my instruction. I have science units and social studies units and math units and Common Core reading and writing. But the reality is that the skills that kids can do and transfer to new situations are what I care the most about. So, you know, at the end of a unit on the Revolutionary War, you know, I'd like my kids to know some basic information. I think that's valuable. But most of the knowledge of the Revolutionary War can be found, you know, if they needed to research it down the road. What I want them to do is, while they're learning about the Revolutionary War and various aspects about it, I want them to be practicing 21st century skills like collaboration and creativity and problem solving. And, you know, we have 34 of them. So I always mention the pretty typical five or six. But we have 34 different skills that I actively teach and assess my students on. We have report cards going out tomorrow. So tomorrow my students are going to get their first report on how they did with their 34 21st century skills, plus their standard report card that they'd be getting. But I feel like those skills, if they're not actively improving those skills, they're not going to be able to transfer the ability to learn very easily from grade to grade. Mm-hmm. Knowing the Revolutionary War isn't enough. You know, they're going to need to know how to learn and how to get along with others and how to solve conflict and all these other things that we look in on. So to me, the 21st century skills is like what I'm shooting for. If I were to give them a test of some sort, I would want there to be more questions on 21st century skills than on the content itself. But I don't give tests on content, so it doesn't work that way. Mm. But anyway.
All right.
That's 21st century skills.
Yep. Yeah, we'll get back into that in a minute. Yes. Here, because I want to get back, and we've been doing some podcasts lately about 21st century skills, 21st century skill report cards. But
sure.
I want to hear a little bit more about the overall concepts of your book, too. So let's talk about the E, and then Mike has a question for you about this crow's nest kind of mentality, too. So.
Sure. So empowerment is really that's the E. You know, it's the last letter in the word pirate. It's almost it should have been the first letter in the book in a way, just because if you don't give your students the power to run the classroom and to do the things you're hoping that they'll do, nothing happens. You know, you've got to empower them to believe in themselves, empower them to lead, empower them to make decisions without the teacher's permission. And all those things are scary, but you know, you give guidelines, you give feedback. My big phrase recently has been, you don't have to ask me permission, but you need to think first, is it something I want you doing? And if not, you know, I'll let you know. You know, so if you make the decision without asking permission and it's not a good one, I'm going to let you know. You know, it won't be a surprise. You know, you're doing something unsure of yourself, but I'm not going to hold any grudges against you. I'm proud of you for taking whatever risk you needed to take. But the idea that we empower our students is going to allow them to take on this leadership role of sharing the workload with the teacher in the classroom.
Yeah, I think that empowerment, I agree with you. It is the starting point. Having taken this philosophy you have in your book and putting it into my own classroom, I can say that if kids still feel like they need to tap on your shoulder and ask you every question and make sure everything's okay with you first, that it kind of, you're going to be spinning your wheels. You gotta let some of that control go and let your kids know that they have the power to make decisions. And you know, and they're not used to that. A lot of these kids are used to having everything told to them.
At home and at school.
Yeah. And when it comes to all of these, the Pirate acronym and all of these things you're allowing your students to do, that empowerment, Are they getting that in their prior grades, or are you the first teacher that is putting that power, giving them that power in your classroom?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I've been doing versions of this for years, so I'd like to believe that at least, you know, in the beginning years of me doing this, You know, I believe I might have been the first that was allowing them to do some of these things in the classroom. Now, though, the last 3 years we've been a leader in me school at our in our school. It's not a district wide initiative, just a school wide. But all the students are learning leadership skills at all grade levels at this point. So I'd like to believe that, you know, they're in the previous grade levels, they're probably doing these sorts of things, calling it many different things and allowing them to do different things. But I think it's probably becoming more and more common in the class. That being said, they still come to me and they're like deer in headlights when I tell them mm-hmm. what to do, you know, what they're allowed to do and what I expect of them. So that hasn't changed necessarily, but I believe the culture is student leadership. So I think that they're a little less shocked that we're doing it, just a little bit more surprised at the fact that everything is being put on them in our classroom. I just expect them to kind of take care of everything. And, you know, the few things that I want to do, you know, they're like thankful that they don't have to do, you know.
Right.
That's the end of part one of our interview with Paul Solars. Hope you enjoyed it and hope you listen to the next episode, part two of our interview.